Hey, Shelly.
Hey, how are you? Yeah, I'm doing great.
That's good.
Yeah, I love being in prison. It's fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for talking to me. I'm a little flipped out.
You and everyone else? Yeah.
I know. But you are my go-to tech guy, so I need help. I haven't figured out the best option for recording interviews remotely. I'm overwhelmed. So,
okay.
Do you have suggestions?
Well, there's a bunch. The super pros use Clean Feed because that's the super pro version. But a lot of people like Squadcast. It's super simple. There's any number of tools you can use out there. Maybe it all depends on your level of sophistication and how super. There's a bunch of them. So
okay.
You choose one you like.
All right. I will. And so will you be my guinea pig?
Absolutely.
Oh, you the man. All right. I'll call you back.
Hey, it's E.B. Moss, and this is episode 2 of Insider Interviews. Now, like so many people right now, I had to figure out my work-from-home technology, especially for recording a remote podcast, as you could hear in that beginning part of the show. So I turned to an expert, Shelly Palmer. Shelly is a tech expert and a media and marketing consultant. And in the beginning of this podcast, you heard me talking to him over the phone through rev.com to record it. Then I picked my platform for the bulk of the podcast. I selected Squadcast as my platform, and that's what you'll hear us on there with my Blue Yeti microphone. And now I took more of his advice and I baffled the sound a little bit, and I'm recording this intro in my bedroom, so I think you'll be able to hear a little bit of a difference. But you don't need to know more of the technology from me. I'm going to turn it over to Shelly Palmer, who gives us a lot of good ideas about general work-from-home technology, all about his new podcast called Aptly, Think About This with Ross Martin, and more about what's going to happen as we try to humanize ourselves through that very tech. So good luck to my editor, Eric Klein, for stitching this all together, and thanks so much for listening.
All kinds of things happen bad when you're in a square room that has hard surfaces when you're recording sound. All kinds of bad stuff. That's the quick physics lesson.
Well, Shelly, I don't know that you noticed this, but I started recording that.
Yeah, totally fine. So in a choice, drapes. I mean, all the things that make you feel sad about being in a room, dark, it doesn't matter, but it's going to get dark. You've drapes on the windows, put blankets up on the hard surfaces, make sure the room is carpeted. The least number of hard surfaces, the happier you're going to be. And the smaller the space is, the happier you're going to be. So the bigger the room, the bigger the space, the longer it takes the sound waves to get from wall to wall. And as they go from wall to wall, they lose energy. And that's what you hear as the reverbs. Now that we've had our physics lesson and our audio lesson.
Thank you, Shelly. Well, the last time I saw you in person, we were with around 150,000 other people at a little conference called CES. And you were giving another one of your famous tours there. And the last time I spoke with you, other than for tech help, the other day on the phone, was on your webinar around how to work from home. So times have changed in a couple of months. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm incredibly lucky and we are blessed in that I've got my whole family. We're holed up here in Vermont. My secret passion in the before time is skiing. And the whole family skis. It's a thing that we've been doing with the kids since they were little. And we got three generations of Palmers up here that are all skiers. Now the ski mountain is closed, but we have facilities up here to live because that's what we do. We ski, ski in the weekends.
Yeah.
So we're very, very lucky. There aren't a whole lot of people up here right now because the mountain is closed and we're just all safe and sound. And how about you guys? How are you guys doing?
Well, you guys is me guys, and we'll hear a little theme about what it's like to be solo in a New York City apartment and why I actually want to thread that together with some more suggestions about work from home. You know, back on this podcast, Insider Interview listeners are mostly in the media and advertising world. And so if they don't know you as the CEO of the Palmer Group, which consults with Fortune 500 companies on digital transformation and marketing, then they would have seen you for sure covering tech and business here in New York, for example, on Good Day or contributing on CNN and CNBC. They've read you in Ad Age, for example.
You got to call my mom and tell her this, because she has no idea what I do. But you really just laid it out beautifully. So thank you for that.
Well, I'm going to leave a little bit for you to fill in, because I also do want to give you props, because they've now also heard you, because aside from a lot of your keynotes, which unfortunately have been canceled, you also now co-host a podcast with Ross Martin. I love it. Think About This.
About This with Shelley Palmer and Ross Martin. It is so much fun to do. First of all, Ross is, as you know, dangerously insane.
Yes.
Gifted, brilliant, and a dear friend of mine for a couple of decades. I love him to death. And together we have been having so much fun talking about business, culture, technology, life, liberty, the pursuit of marketing. It's really been, it started as a labor of love. I was so surprised at the size of the audience we have amassed so quickly. We're on, I think, maybe our 20th or 21st episode now. We were number 5 in tech podcasts a week or so ago, and it was, we had beaten the Wall Street Journal. I mean, that made no sense to me whatsoever, although Ross is very fun. But we talk about interesting stuff, though, and we've had some amazing guests. I mean, truly amazing guests who, for reasons that cannot be explained, are willing to tell us things on our podcast they don't usually tell other people. Marketing tricks notwithstanding, but good solid life experiences, and in usually a pretty fun way. So we've just had a blast, and we're recording every week still, remotely, of course.
And
it's all good. I'm very excited about that. I'm so sad about what's happening in the world right now that I'm kind of, my enthusiasm is curbed no matter what.
We're
doing a weekly work from home series on Sundays now on Zoom. Yes. That people can sign up for. It's just shelleypalmer.com/WFH work from home. And then Wednesdays we're doing this Socratic interactive discussion session. The first one was, asking what a post-coronavirus society might look like. Next week, we're going to talk about this horrifying idea I saw in the news yesterday. Hospitals are going to, by policy, start to consider universal DNR orders for people with coronavirus, where they just won't resuscitate people after a certain point. My thinking has evolved on that over time as I watched my dad pass away years ago over 18 weeks slowly. So I've had personal feelings about it, but so does everybody else. And we're going to discuss the ethics of that and what it means. That's going to be hardcore.
It will be hardcore. And I'm hoping that we'll keep things a little bit more on the upside. But can we get recordings of that, Shelley?
Yeah. All that stuff's going to be available at shelleypalmer.com. The two URLs, shelleypalmer.com/WFH for work from home. That's on Sundays from 2 to 3. Mm-hmm. And then at the moment, we're planning weekly shelleypalmer.com/chat. And that's where the Socratic discussions are. And those are Wednesdays from 3 to 4. And you can get credentials by just going there and asking for credentials. It's been about 100, 150 people in each one of these. It's a little too many. I was hoping for 40 or 50 because it's an easier kind of conversation to have. But people are learning to be respectful on these big Zoom meetings. We use Zoom, and I mean, we can have up to 10,000 people. We don't. And instead of doing it as a webinar, which is one to many, because that tool set we have a couple different ways. We've got that from a company called Webinar Jam. Mm-hmm. We also have that from join.me. And of course, we have it at Zoom. So, and why you use one over the other is in some cases personal preference, and in others has to do technologically with where you are and what you're trying to do. We have the ability to just make it a one to many. And I thought I'd have to do that, but I didn't. Everybody has been super respectful. They either virtually raise their hands by clicking a button, or they actually just raise their hands because they're on video, they're shaking their hands. Like, oh, and you can see their names, you're calling them by name. And I was surprised in every case over the last 2 weeks, how people are so quickly adapting to and evolving into good citizens in video chat. It's fantastic. So we're all, you know, you can teach old dogs new tricks. Apparently you can. People are getting really good at that. I know, because I mean, even in person, when you do it, you kind of have to say, okay, one person at a time. And yes, you know, now EB, it's your turn to talk, right?
Right.
Even in an in-person environment, it's hard to herd those kinds of cats. And online, it's actually a little bit easier. And one of the things we did that I thought was super fun was we had people ask questions in advance, in real time, in the chat client inside of Zoom. Then one of my coworkers made some polls, and for the bigger questions, and we threw the polls up during the conversation. And this was all super easy to do and very low key and on the fly and very informal. And the other thing I love about what's happening right now is formality has gone out the window. People are coming in t-shirts.
You
people
are in your coming. T-shirt right
I'm
now.
I'm in a t-shirt now. Uh-huh. Thank you. People are coming
I
in
put
t-shirts.
On lipstick.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I didn't, as you can tell. But I did comb my hair. That's a joke for those of you who don't understand. I have basically no hair. But anyway, I've been bald for years. But the end of the day, people have been very, very low-key about this. They've been accepting of technical glitches that you would never have accepted before. It really reminds me, dramatically reminds me of the change in video grammar in 1980, oddly enough. And then the change in video grammar again when smartphones became vertical video cameras. And the old schoolers were like, oh, you can't do that. That's vertical video syndrome. And like, and then all, now everything is vertical, right? So it was fascinating to me to see the speed with which people are willing to adopt bad lighting, accept it, bad camera angles, bad makeup, bad hair, bad. Everybody's fine with it. And I think it's fantastic because the most important thing is that we all get together, right? That's the most important thing, that we figure out how to be social animals in a time when coronavirus is making us, forcing us to be less social.
Well, I want to ask you two questions right along those lines. The first is I want to go back to some of the takeaways from your work from home webinar or Zoom meeting.
Or thinger, whatever that thinger was.
Yes. And the other one, speaking of we're just a little bit more authentic, to use that word, what about the human side of the media business now? So two parts, you know, what can we do to work better, work smarter with our own personal tech stack? And then how do we use that technology to still connect in a human way?
All right. Those are two great questions. Let me take them one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Tech stack. The tech stack I'm sitting in front of right now was not planned in any way. I was leaving for what I thought was going to be the weekend in Vermont. Then I was coming home Sunday night, getting on a plane to Deer Valley and having a year long in the making, planning the entire family in Deer Valley, which I've got three adult children and two grandchildren. And when you get that kind of group, everybody's got their own lives and their own time and their own work schedules and school schedules. And the ability to just get everyone in one place literally took a year to plan. And of course, that was canceled. Mm-hmm. So I found myself leaving for Vermont and then deciding I'm not going home. Well, I had planned to go home and pack up for a week. So I only brought what I needed for the weekend. In my case, that included... In my case, that included my MacBook Pro, a 4K Sony camera that I use for my own podcasting stuff. I just because I thought I might want to record over the weekend, I brought the microphone I'm on right now.
Wow.
And an interface. I was thinking, yeah, maybe I'll do some like work on my podcast in advance so I could not have to do it while I was away skiing. So just on happenstance, I brought a fairly significant amount of equipment with me, but not necessarily the right equipment, just a significant amount of equipment that I could quickly do some stuff. And then I was just going to bring it home. So my tech stack is kludged together. I have a couple of Apple monitors here that were in the closet. They're old. They're 2012 vintage 27-inch.
For me, that's new. For you, that's 100
volt monitors. Well, I mean, it would hardly be considered, you know, current technology. There's a Retina display on my MacBook Pro. There's a HD display that is a little bit hurting because it's pretty old on these two Apple monitors, but I'm thrilled to have them because it's a desktop that's big and I like a big messy desk on my computer. The tech stack that's here will ultimately evolve as Amazon starts to ship again. And I consider how long I'm going to stay here in my holdup new, very attractive, but any prison is still a prison if you can't leave it. I mean, no matter how pretty it is, that will evolve into flip a button and my wife won't have a heart attack when she walks up into this loft going, oh my God, clean this place up. How could you even sit in this mess? There's wires everywhere. And this will get worked out, right? Over time, we'll figure out which camera is going to be permanently installed and we'll install it, how to exactly light this. The couch in the background is going to get moved in some, like, stuff will get fixed. So the tech stack, the physical space will evolve. As far as the gear is concerned.
For the average human, Shelley, not the Shelley Palmers of the world.
No. Well, first of all, there's no such thing as a Shelley Palmers of the world versus an average human. We're all average humans today. I think coronavirus has taught us that pretty quickly and pretty clearly. Doesn't matter who you are, what you know, what you think you know, where you live. You're just a human being right now. And I think that's one of the best lessons. If there is a best lesson, that's one of the best lessons from where we are. But for people who want to communicate using audio and video through their technology, let's go down the list of things you need quickly. Obviously, you need a workspace. And that workspace should be conducive to working. And it should be in a place that is, you would consider only for work. And the reason is, if you're working from home, you need a way to know psychologically, sociologically, physiologically, you are working versus not working. I've worked from home for over 20 years. And so I have a space in my house in New York that is my workspace. And there are rules around that. I get there in the morning at normal business hours. I take breaks every 45 minutes to an hour to walk around a little bit. I take lunch every day because you take lunch. I get lunch. My boss gives it to me. Oh, wait, I'm my boss. I get lunch. I have a quitting time. And I can walk away from that space. When I'm in that space, other cohabitants of my apartment in New York understand that I'm in my workspace and I'm not home. I'm working from home. There's a giant difference between being home and working from home.
Love that.
Right. So when I'm in my workspace, it is clear that I'm working. When I'm on a break, it's clear that I'm on a break. Now, when I learned this a long time ago, 20 years ago, my kids were little. My adult children were little. And I was working from home and they would come in at any given time and, hey, Dad. And of course, you want to be a great father. So you want to stop and talk to your kids. You also need to be a good worker. And so you have to deal with your clients and your projects. And so I was being good at neither. I was being not a great father because I was so busy doing my thing. And I was not being a good worker because I just ever would stop every time my kids would walk in. So about 20, 25 years ago, when I started working from home, it only took me about 6 months to realize this is not sustainable. And I sort of evolved these little work rules for myself and everybody, you know, respected them. It's not that I didn't want to be a good dad. I took more breaks than I normally would if I worked in an office, but I also didn't have a commute. So I had extra time. I could be there for breakfast. I could be there to do homework at night. I could be there to, like, there were things I was able to do from home that I could never have done if I was, you know, getting up at 5:30 in the morning and on a train at 6:25. And there were trade-offs, and I made those trade-offs a long time ago. So I would beg everybody, build a workspace and have real regular hours that you keep and be a rule maker. Say, look, when I'm working, I'm working, and when I'm not working, I'm not working. Now, the good news about that is your commute may be short, but you know when you're on the clock and when you're off the clock. When you're off the clock, when you work from home, you need to be off the clock. Some people go as far. I have friends who literally have two different computers. One that sits in a workspace that's like a desktop or a laptop that's really installed with lots of extra monitors and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they'll use an iPad or they'll use their phone when they're sitting in the living room so that they can text their friends and have Facebook open and do whatever. It's like even a different technical environment.
That's interesting.
Just because they're not working, right? Because otherwise you will literally work, most of us who are trying to, especially now when there's so much financial pressure to figure something out, people are just going to work 24 hours a day. And that can't be healthy. You need your exercise. You need the mind and the body and the spirit all lined up. You have to take care of the whole human. So working from home is going to be a cultural shock. It's going to be a psychological shock. If you haven't done it, it took me a couple of years to figure out how to do it. And that was when I had no external pressure to do it. I did it by choice and figured it out over time. Most of us don't have a choice right now. With people I'm talking to, they've just been forced either by their company, by the government, by just fear, work from home. And how do you do it? So first things first, get your workspace together.
So within that workspace, there are so many choices. I mean, we went through that on my phone call with you about all of my options for, you know, remote interviews. Mm-hmm. there's Trello and there's Slack and there. So do you mm-hmm. have your top three must-have things aside from peripherals?
If you are really just working by yourself and you're not working for someone, but you're working by yourself, that is a very, or, you know, for yourself, you are your own boss. It's a really different set of tools than if you're working for a corporation and you're working at home. So if you're working for a corporation, there's a really good chance that they will dictate the virtual private network and the login. They will dictate what office suite you're going to use. In 85 or 90% of the cases, that's Microsoft Office, either the downloadable version or Office 365. That includes Word and Excel and PowerPoint, probably OneDrive for storage and a couple other things. If you work in a small company, that unless you're super, super, super trained or in the financial services business or super trained to work in Microsoft, it's probably not the best choice. It's just a choice. The better choice, I think, for collaborative, small collaborative companies is Google, Google Apps, Google Suite, for a couple reasons. Mostly, the Google Docs is truly interactive, as are Google Sheets, which are their version of Excel, and Google Slides, which is their version of PowerPoint. These are crippled versions of the program. Don't get me wrong. PowerPoint is way more powerful than Google Slides. The downloadable version of Excel is the gold standard for spreadsheets, period, end of story. If you need that and you work in financial services and you're doing computationally intensive big spreadsheets, you got to have the downloadable version of Excel. We're not talking about that. If you're someone who in their office uses a spreadsheet to schedule stuff or put a, you know, you're going to do conditional formatting, you get things in pretty colors and you're going to change font sizes, which is nothing that a financial analyst would do. But people who are around the office who are going to have, you know, colored, I'm coloring this row, green and this row orange, and I'm going to color code this invoice blue because it's been paid. If you do that, then Google Sheets is fine. Truthfully, even Excel from Office 365, the crippled version of Excel is fine for that, although its conditional formatting is not conducive to pretty pictures. But notwithstanding, the Google Suite is really good for collaboration. You put 6-10 people into a document at a time. You can have their chat through Google Hangouts. You can have Slack running, so that everybody's on a Slack channel, which is sort of a lot like just having an internal messaging tool set. I like Slack because you can give clients channels that are their own channels, and you can interact with clients mm-hmm. without having to send emails. So you're not having millions of email threads you don't need. A lot of clients are slow to adapt to Slack. Many of them are Microsoft shops, so they're already using Microsoft Teams, which is Microsoft's version of Slack. Microsoft's offering that free right now, so they're really trying to take advantage of the people working at home. But one way or the other, if your corporation is dictating stuff, then that's what you're going to use. And if you're working with a small team at home for the first time, if you're getting new tools, you probably want to sit with your group and talk about everyone's experience, because I would find it impossible to believe that people who are working together in a small office don't already have a set of protocols and a set of tools that are favorite tools. When you're working totally by yourself right now, the most important thing you can do, I think, is send an email or a text message to everybody you know in the world and find out how they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number one way to work from home right now. It's the interaction that you miss. And so I cannot tell you how many people have just sent me a one-line text or a one-line email. Hey, Shell, how are you? What's up? Mm-hmm. You know, we're in so-and-so, we're doing this, kids are fine, mom is not doing well, she's scared, you know, how are you in the family? And that starter conversation, I'm spending almost an hour a day now interacting with people who I care a great deal about, who I ordinarily would see on a, you know, weekly or semi-weekly basis. I just got a very unfortunate email from the people at Michael's, the staff. They have a GoFundMe page for the wait staff and the kitchen staff at Michael's mm-hmm. restaurant. It may be a first world problem, but once or twice a week for the last 20 years, I've been going to Michael's for lunch, and you see people there all the time. You just do. And you wave. It's a community. I think that restaurant has evolved over the years to just be that. It's basically the lunchroom for the advertising and media business, mm-hmm. right? I was heartbroken that the wait staff had all to be laid off. And, you know, the GoFundMe page was certainly a wake-up call about the condition of the world. But so many of the people that I ordinarily see from 12:30 to 2, where you just, you know, you just wave your hand and smile and nod. And every once in a while, someone says, oh, Shelley, I've got a thing I want to talk to you about. And so that, you know, okay, that's solved for an office meeting I don't have to do. And then you'd make, you know, you'd have a phone call or you send an email later. All that's gone.
Oh.
Right? All that's gone for now. And until it comes back, you need to do it. Like, there's no version of the world where we don't have to do that. The thing is, the opportunity to see someone at the water cooler, to see someone at the elevator, to see someone when you're walking in or out of work, that's not there now. And so you have to electronically take care of that. And the way you do that is text messages and email. It's the simplest thing in the world. It doesn't require any new skills yet, but what it does require is a cultural and psychological shift into, wait a minute, I'm not a Facebook person, says most people I know. I'm not a LinkedIn person, says, you know, unless I'm looking for work, right? So what is the average really hardcore worker in the middle of their career if they're not trying to become a social media influencer? Like, what's their outreach? And generally the answer is their outreach isn't. Their outreach is they're very busy doing their work. Here you have it. It's passion project time, right? Your passion project now is to be part of a larger world electronically. And it's very time consuming. It is, I mean, it's stunningly so, because we're not used to it. So my number one recommendation to everybody is don't worry about the technology. Text, smoke signals, carrier pigeon, skywriting, doesn't matter what it is, paper airplane, just get out there to everybody and say, hey, what's up? How are you? Do you need any help? And whatever it is you want to say. But making the time to do that every day is one of the biggest cultural shifts now, because you really can't go outside. And by the way, even for me, I've been working from home literally for over 20 years. It's a giant, giant change in the way I spend my morning. Get up, take my walk, get my coffee, sit down and do an hour's worth of how are you check-ins. Mm-hmm. That's new.
And how do you, Shelley, you kind of famously have fit more fitness into your life. What are the human tips for how you're maintaining that?
It's really hard. Yeah. And it's really hard. And the fear factor is dramatic. Every day you turn the news on, you don't know what to hear, what you're going to hear. I'm not a doomsday prepper. I wrote an article 5 years ago called Data Doomsday Preppers, about what you'd need to have from a data perspective if you were like one of those doomsday preppers who like hoarded cans of food and medical supplies. And Ellen Lohman, my proofreader, who has been proofing my stuff for 25 years, sent me a note because I didn't write an original piece last Sunday. For the first time in 25 years, I didn't write a thought leadership piece on a Sunday. What I did was I did a wrap up of my daily missives about things you needed to do to work from home and be set up, just as a sort of a little bit of a public service. And so she wrote me, said, hey, you know, you forgot all about your Data Doomsday Prepper article. And she sent me a copy of my own article
in 2015.
Yeah. And wow. I'm like, wow. And I reread it and I thought to myself, God, I was so much smarter than I am right now.
No. I'm going to stop you there, because we'll take it back to the podcast for two topics. You were pretty prescient just, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks ago in an episode, I think it was Valentine's Day episode. And I told you that I'm here alone in my New York City apartment, but you and Ross discussed how we're all going to be in relationships with artificial companions sooner rather than later. And so now, since like the good news, bad news is that most of the dogs are adopted and fostered from now, can you point me to one?
I tell you what, the cultural shift is going to be dramatic. And everything I know about marketing says that if you brush your teeth for 21 days in a row, on the 22nd day, it is a habit. It's a real habit. And you are going to brush your teeth every day for the rest of your life. And this has been researched by Colgate and P&G and Unilever forever. They're pretty sure that the number is 21 days. If you don't make it to 21 days, it's not going to be a habit. And then it needs to be reinforced. And you need a little brand love. Like, there's a whole arc of things you need to do as a marketer to create a habit, reinforce a habit, keep it all, you know, as they say, why do they ring the church bell every Sunday? Everybody knows where the church is. It's like, there's something about church bells. Apparently the church knows exactly how to remind you it's church time every Sunday. But meanwhile, they're not reminding me where the church is or why I'm going there. They're simply saying, hey, it's now.
Yeah.
Brush your teeth. You know, it's now time to come. So all this is getting redone. What is, are we going to wash our hands 15 times a day for the rest of our lives? Are we going to be wary, you and I and our kids and their kids, are they going to be wary of large groups for the next 5 years and not be willing to do that? Like, I have no idea. It, is a certain group of people is going to just go out and party like it's 1999 the minute this is over. But when is it over and how do you know? Like, this isn't an episode that has a beginning, middle, and ending. This is like a siege. The little virus things are like laying siege to humanity. It's a novel virus. And until a substantial number of human beings get it and develop immunity to it, it's going to be a problem now, unless there's a vaccine. So I'm a big believer in technology. I'm crossing my fingers that there's going to be some tech that takes care of some of this at some point. But even on, under the best scenarios, the smartest people I've talked to on the subject tell me that's not happening tomorrow. It's going to take, you know, there's some time involved. So we are going to adopt whatever this new world order is. We're going to try and figure it out. And if that includes having artificial companions, maybe. I think the most important thing here is that we don't need artificial companions. We can have each other. And I don't like the word virtual so much anymore. Mm. Like, you know, Shelley, would you do a virtual speaking engagement for me? It's like, no, I'll do an actual speaking engagement for you. And I will use some tools to make myself appear magically like television in front of, you know, in front of your audience, who, by the way, will magically appear in front of me. Yeah, it's not physical, meaning we're not there. But this idea that it's not real doesn't make any sense to me. One of the things I think is fantastic that's happened over the last few weeks, sacred cows have been just decimated. My doctor would never send me an email because of insurance purposes, would never do a video chat because he wasn't part of a telehealth medicine thing and couldn't submit insurance for it. So it wasn't a real visit. So without the $40 copay, he wasn't going to take his time because he's got a waiting room full of patients. Plus he's getting paid for insurance. So he would never, ever, ever consider it. Now they won't let you come into the office. So that's a sacred cow that went away in a heartbeat.
Mm.
Same thing with teachers. All of a sudden, my granddaughter's teachers are running all these wonderful during school and after school Zooms. My 8-year-old granddaughter has every day at 3:30, a 30-person play date on Zoom that's, you know, with parents. So monitoring. So it's a pretty quick adaptation to a completely new world where things that I'm sure Congress is going to figure out how to vote remotely now. That was never going to happen unless something external, right? I mean, this thing, like, we're going to have election month, not election day. What does that do to gerrymandering? I go down the list of things that are going to be different now because they have to be. And so the tool sets, yes, we're more isolated in many ways, but I think if we work hard, we can do what you and I are doing right now, because it's such a pleasure to see you right in front of me and talk to you. And yeah, would it be better if we were here? We could grab a beer together. Yeah, but we can grab a beer separately and I'll still enjoy the beer and I can still enjoy your company. And until it's safe for all of us to get together, that's going to be the reality we live in.
So one of the predictions that you've also made, with or without COVID-19 in our midst, was the impact of AI. And I'm a little annoyed with you, Shelley, because in one of your episodes, you also said that you think that journalists are going to get replaced.
Definitely.
Five things. Oh, no. Really?
No, definitely. Yeah. Look, opinion pieces are not getting replaced. Fact-based report writing is already substantially done by computers. If you go to Bloomberg and you're looking at somebody's financial information, it is almost all written by computer or computer assist. So I think that fact-based journalism has a real opportunity to be replaced. Unfortunately, for all of us who are human beings on this planet, fact-based journalism is already an endangered species, and almost everyone is confusing opinion and fact, and they are putting them all in the news category, which I think is really problematic. And then there's, you know, social media, where everyone's got an opinion and all of a sudden that's treated as news. Stephen Colbert in 2005 coined a phrase, truthiness, and at the same time, wikiality. And the definition of wikiality was the narrative that's most comfortable wins. Every, you know, oh, this is the story I like. The, Great Wall of China is the only man-made object that can be seen from space. Well, that's not true. You can see lots of man-made objects from space, but people believe the Eskimos have 27 words for snow. No, they don't. They have one word for snow. It's snow, but it's a romantic notion. So the narrative with the, you know, that's most comfortable wins is where he was warning us even that long ago, 15 years ago. We're there in spades, and it's a real problem. So whether AI is capable of doing that work and whether it will do that work are two different conversations. There are many technologies like the video we're on right now and the audio we're recording right now. These technologies have been available at this level for a decade. Mm-hmm. Why don't teachers use them? Why don't the doctors use them? Why doesn't Congress use them? Why don't people use them for meetings? They could, they don't. Now they are. And so it's never been a technology question. And so that I don't ever equate the availability of a piece of technology with its adoption, because human beings are habit forming, as we described, and those habits die hard. They really do.
Well, hopefully more people are developing the podcast habit. I'm curious to see if with our distraction from the news and with having to help homeschool children, podcasts will decrease in listenership, or because we're home more and we need that companionship, like my favorite companion, Alexa, if it's going to increase.
There she is.
Yep.
So, you know, EB, I would argue the following, and this is going to sound broken record-y, cliche-ish, but good content is always in demand and bad content is always a fad. You know, the average number of podcasts is 7 and then people stop. My suspicion is that the average number of Zoom meetings is going to be 11 or 12.
That we listen to or participate in.
And then people will either stop or they'll gravitate to the ones they like. And the people mm-hmm. who are doing it as sort of like, it's cool to do this week, will stop doing it. I started writing my Sunday blog in 1996. 40 people on the email list. It was the 40 people I had on my email list in total at that time. This morning, we sent that exact same newsletter out, which I've been doing daily, mm-hmm. To 658,227 people.
Whoa.
So it's grown on its own over time. And from my perspective, that's not a testament to me or the content or anything. It simply says that if you make a promise to somebody, which is, I'm going to give you something of value every morning that you will be able to use to make yourself more money, make yourself enriched psychologically or sociologically, give you something of value. You give me a few seconds and I'm going to give you something of value you can use today. You make that promise and you keep it, then people are going to hang out with you.
Well, to wrap it up, I want to give you a compliment and I want to talk about, how we make money. Specifically on your podcast, you wove in an ad recently for Blinkist. And I have to say, it was one of the most authentic, organic sounding host reads I'd heard in a long time. And I really thought it was the epitome of the value of podcast advertising. We'll think about it as, Shelley Palmer made that recommendation, like word of mouth. How hard is it to ramp up sponsors now? I know that you're a Westwood One podcast and they're probably doing the heavy lifting for you, but tell me a little bit about the monetization.
So Westwood sells the Think About This with Shelley Palmer, Ross Martin advertising. We won't take an advertiser unless either Ross or I use the product. And in most cases, we both need to use it. The reason that sounded like an authentic host read is because it was an authentic host read. I read a ton, and before they'd come to us to be an advertiser, I had already been using the product, so it wasn't hard for me. You can't do that all the time, and I don't really endorse a lot of stuff, EB. You know I don't. People always accuse me, you're getting paid by Samsung. You're getting paid by Apple. It's like, really? Have you read the stuff I write? You know, when Apple does something evil, I let them know to their consternation. And believe me, I hear about it when I do it. And the Samsung guys, oddly enough, are more thankful. Like when I bash Samsung, they're generally a lot more thankful about it, considering, you know, they're the bigger advertiser in the Shelley Palmer world or the bigger sponsor. And I bash them relentlessly because, you know, when they do stuff that I think is stupid, I'll say it. So authenticity is important. I've always had a pretty significant separation of church and state, and it's to me that's not hard to do. And I don't have trouble saying nice things about stuff when it needs nice stuff. The problem that we have in the world is that people use the word best to describe stuff. What's the best blank? What's the best podcasting software? What's the best, you know, what's the best microphone? What's there's no such thing.
Be best. Right?
No, you're using Squadcast for this, which is fine. I've used it once or twice. It has certain limitations, which maybe are not limitations to you. I don't use it on a regular basis because I have different needs almost always. It doesn't mean Squadcast is good or bad or that I would or wouldn't endorse it. But I would never say something like, this is the best blank, and put a name in there because it's just not correct in my world. And so therein lies the devil's in the details, right? If you want a synopsis of a business book, wow, Blinkist has, you know, yeah, that's a good synopsis. Is it the best synopsis ever? No, the best synopsis is the one I annotate for myself in the margins of a book that I completely and totally read. That's the best ones. The next best ones, there's 20 places I can get them, right? Including, by the way, Google Scholarly, scholar.google.com, which has most of the hardcore scholarly papers available online. So it's like, yeah, that's why I don't have a lot of trouble endorsing stuff when I narrow down why I'm endorsing. And I have it, and I'll never, ever endorse something like, oh, you know, go out and buy a blank. No, that's not never coming out of my mouth. No matter who it is, it's just never coming out of my mouth.
Well, I love what came out of your mouth today. So I'm going to wrap it up with a big thank you, Shelley, for sharing the human side of you, the predictive projection side of you, the educational side of you. This was really, really helpful, from helping me get started with my first remote interview to educating us about work from home. So
my pleasure, EB. Look, stay safe.
Thank you.
And let's do this again sometime.
I hope you got some good inside scoop from this podcast. There's a lot more where this one came from. So please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you download your podcasts, Apple, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts. You know the drill. I also want to thank Eric Klein for his excellent editing, and my friend John Clayton for the fantastic theme music for Insider Interviews with E.B. Moss.